The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you again from our brand new studio, high atop the Edstone structure, in the loft. Speaking of the loft, the names that have been submitted, sometimes we go a few programs without getting too many emails to speak of, and yet we put out the call for names of the new studio, and quite a few people weighed in. Things like the Trumpet Tower, the Eye in the Sky. One had the idea to name it the Annex. I'm not sure what that means, but the Upper Room, the Trumpet Terrace. Let's see, the Mile High Studio. We're not quite a mile up in the air. Someone suggested the Gondola for the name of the new studio. The Comfort Zone. I kind of like that one because it is comfortable in here. I think more so than the one downstairs. In any event, we'll probably settle in on two, maybe three of these. Maybe we can switch the names around from time to time. One individual actually emailed and said just the loft itself is a nice sounding name. So in any event, we're happy to be here. I know the guys have been working to try to put in more soundproofing so that the sound can just get better and better. And they've been scurrying around all morning to get things set up for today's broadcast. While on the subject of those emailing in, just a few emails here that we'll start with on today's show. In response to yesterday's, it says, thank you for the inspiring TD from a loft in the loft. It says, I was able to listen to this morning's broadcast in the car while leaving early on a road trip. Your words about fighting back against Satan's attacks like Daniel did were especially encouraging. Another one here says, I'm a new member of the church, newly invited to attend services. I listen to the Trumpet Daily Show almost 95% of the time, and sometimes I've wanted to email and give my opinion on some things to say just how awesome it is. I was blessed to meet your father in Greenville. It was such a wonderful experience, and I plan to write him a letter soon, thanking him. And then one final one here. It says, a while back you mentioned Mortimer Adler's book, How to Read a Book. My husband had that book, she says. It's a very good read, and I think my son has the copy now. I still have Mortimer Adler's How to Speak and How to Listen. She says, it's been very helpful for me to explain how to take notes on speeches and sermons. And she's going way back saying that Adler used to have a radio show. I forget when Adler died. I think maybe 15, 20 years ago. But he used to have a radio show that she also remembers listening to with her husband back in the day. Well, on today's program, we have a lot to get to. I want to update you on the situation in South Africa. You may have seen some stories yesterday about the South African government seizing farmland from some of the white farmers. Some shocking developments coming out of South Africa, and we'll give you a few sound bites again to just give you the news as it's not being reported. I mean, you just don't hear about it. People don't talk about it. They just get behind whatever their agenda is, and once it happens, then they don't update you about, well, has this really worked? I mean, the media just pounces on President Trump every time he talks about fake news, but he has a point. Where are you getting the truth? Jesus said the truth will set us free. I mean, how are we going to be free without the truth of God? This first segment here that I have, it ties right in with this same theme. Look at the failure of Venezuela as a socialist state. Look at what's happened to that poor nation just in the past 10, 15 years. I want to refer you back to Andrew Miller's segment on Trumpet Hour Friday. He went through that New York Times opinion piece, which I just noticed my mic is drifting down. Is that a problem? Here we go. Let's fix it, Sam. He referred to that piece in the New York Times. I think it was last Wednesday or Thursday, where it talked about the Constitution being the problem. And so on the Trumpet Hour, Andrew Miller was talking about, you know, the wave of this these Democrat socialists, the Bernie Sanders revolution. And then the other gal, the new young one, Cortez is her last name. And, of course, Elizabeth Warren. These are some of the big stars from the far left. Andrew pointed out on the program Friday that the Democratic Socialist movement in the United States, it's multiplied its membership by something like 8 times. The millennials, the young people in particular, I mean, they love Bernie Sanders. They love his socialist policies. And it's just growing in popularity in, of all places, the United States of America. As I say, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Cortez. And these people are out there saying, look, socialism is what will solve all of America's problems. Take from the rich and give to the poor. That's what they're out there promoting. Webster says this about socialism: a system or condition of society in which the means of production are owned and controlled by the state. That's what Elizabeth Warren is proposing. And that's what so many of America's youth are on board with. According to a Gallup poll just this month, 45% of Americans, young Americans, that's aged 18 to 29, they view capitalism positively. 51% have a positive view of socialism. So the young people of the United States, they view socialism more positively than they do capitalism. And so when Elizabeth Warren comes along and says, hey, the state should control everything, well, people hardly even take notice. It's no big deal. They just get out there and they promote their promises. Free this, free that, free things for everyone. Everyone gets something. This is from the National Review. Last week, or just a few days ago, it says Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts has one-upped socialist Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She proposes to nationalize every major business in the United States of America. This is Elizabeth Warren wanting to nationalize every major business in the U.S. It says here, if successful, it would constitute the largest seizure of private property in human history. This is, she could potentially run for president in a couple of years. I think she's stated as much. Many people want her to. It says Warren's proposal is dishonestly called the Accountable Capitalism Act. So it's socialism through and through, and then they call it capitalism, and they're off and running. And where are the news media? Where are they out there saying, look, let me tell you the truth about this movement, about these policies, about these beliefs? In fact, we can look at a case study. We can look at what's happened down in Venezuela or Cuba. There's a long list of failures just in the past century. Everywhere it's been tried, it's failed miserably so, spectacularly so. It says, the answer, accountable to whom, National Review says? That's a reasonable question. The answer, as it always is, accountable to politicians who desire to put the assets and productivity of private businesses under political discipline for their own selfish ends. And so it goes on to explain what Warren has proposed, that, you know, no business with more than $1 billion in revenue would be permitted to legally operate without the permission of the federal government. So, government control. Government control of private business. That's what she's wanting. And then, of course, this article goes into all of these states, these failed states that have tried exactly this. Hugo Chavez, of course, leading the way down in Venezuela before he died in, I think it was 2013. Well, and you can get to the stats if you want them. You're not going to get at the mainstream level. But you can see just how socialism did down in Venezuela, this nation that was, that had so much in the way of resources, a lot of wealth, a lot of oil, but all of that was taken from the citizenry. The government seized control of it. And now look at Venezuela today. Hugo Chavez, I mean, he drew inspiration from Fidel Castro, the Cuban leader. And look at these failed experiments over and over again. Chavez, he ran for president back in 1999, and he told the people, look, put me in. If you're not happy with me, I'll leave in 2 years. I just want what's best for you. I'm just promising something for everyone. And look, we're going to be rich and prosperous. Well, he went into office in 1999 with no intention whatsoever of leaving. He wasn't going to give up power. And he ruled all the way till the time of his death in 2013. He was replaced by the vice president, Nicolas Maduro. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. People are standing in line for hours and hours just to get food, just to get some food. And the people in Venezuela, across the board, they're losing weight. On average, they're losing 19 pounds per year, not because they're trying to lose weight, because there's not enough food to go around, because it's too expensive. Stuart Varney on Fox News, he called Venezuela, or said that it's reached the point of being a wheelbarrow economy, hearkening back to the Weimar days. Of course, it's not a wheelbarrow today that they wheel around all this cash in. It's still done by cards mostly, credit. But a lot of people are having to use 3 and 4 cards just to make one purchase, because they're in such a state of hyperinflation that from one day to the next, who knows how much higher the price is going to go. This is what Varney had to say on Fox News, I think yesterday or the day before. This is clip 2.
Venezuela has become the Somalia of Latin America. People fleeing left, right, and center, creating a refugee crisis all around. And a chronic catastrophe in Venezuela.
A chronic catastrophe in Venezuela. And you have these Venezuelans now that are fleeing the country, trying to get out. They're trying to find a place where they can have food and shelter. This other article from the Times: hyperinflation is creating a nation of poverty-stricken millionaires in Venezuela. Everyone has millions and millions of dollars, but they're not worth anything, or whatever they call the Venezuelan currency. The article says one of the most popular shows on Venezuelan TV had to be pulled off the air because its title had become a national embarrassment. Who wants to be a millionaire? Based on the British program, it had been running for 17 years, this article says. And by the time the final episode played for the top prize, which had already been doubled to 2 million bolivars, that's the currency, 2 million bolivars, that was actually worth less than 1,500 pounds. Who wants to be a millionaire? Well, people have millions and millions of bolivars, but it doesn't buy much of anything. It says, so brutal has this country's inflation been since then that last week the contestants would have been competing for a jackpot of 13 cents, 13 pence. In one of the many surreal distortions of hyperinflation, Venezuela this year became a country where everyone was a millionaire, but 82% were living in poverty. So how about that? Here's the truth about socialism, the experiment in Venezuela. Here's the truth about Hugo Chavez-style socialism. Everyone's a millionaire, and everyone's in poverty. Prices are doubling there every 25 days. They're doubling. And this is what many young people in the United States want. This is the road that we want to go down in America. Incredibly. Everything from 10 of tomatoes to a carton of eggs costs not hundreds of thousands of bolivars, but millions. A couple of weeks ago, I saw a television, this author says, for sale at 7 billion bolivars. 7 billion to get a TV. It explains how that the calculator's there. They're not big enough. They don't have enough. They don't have enough numbers in the screen to keep up with inflation in Venezuela. Minimum wage isn't keeping pace. The average wage for so many is about a dollar every 3-4 weeks. About a pound a month, it says in this British publication. A pound a month. And people across the board, they're losing something like 19 pounds per year. President Maduro says that a new economic future for the country will begin with the reconversion of the bolivar today. They're just basically nixing 5 zeros from off the currency. Everything's going to be fixed. We're gonna redo the currency. And now things will really work out. Maduro said in a speech recently, I want the country to recover and I have the formula. Trust me, he said. Sounds a lot like Bernie Sanders. Sounds a lot like Miss Cortez. Sounds a lot like Elizabeth Warren. Hey, look, the government will take care of everything. The government will provide the solution. I mean, does this give you much hope in man? Even in the United States of America, where capitalism for the longest time was the economy of choice, more young people today in the U.S., well, they prefer socialism. They prefer this utopian socialist dream that just keeps failing. And the failure is spectacular, and it's right in front of our faces. Except that where are all of the commentators? Remember how they were visiting Hugo Chavez, the Hollywood celebrities and such? Not that long ago, Sean Penn and others like him going down to Venezuela, shaking hands with the dictator, coming back to the United States and going on the talk shows and raving about Hugo Chavez and all of the wonders he was doing for Venezuela. And the media wonder why President Trump would go on and on about fake news. Are they really concerned about educating the American people? I'm talking about media members. I'm talking about people who write for the New York Times or who commentate on CNN. Because where are the in-depth exposés saying, this is what happened, it didn't work, we don't want to go down that road? All that you'll get is, maybe you'll get that in a few conservative publications and that's it. Because people don't care about disseminating the truth. They don't care about giving you the truth. It's all politics. Notice what Stuart Varney went on to say on that Fox News show, clip 3.
I want to make the point that Venezuela is a good example of what we should not be doing. Last week, Elizabeth Warren wanted to have political control over business. She wanted big business to go to Washington and beg for permission to do business. That's political control over enterprises. It's a terrible idea. Sure. That's why Venezuela's gone down the drain.
It's the same thing. It's the same course. This is why Venezuela went down the drain. Government control over business. Political control over business. That's what Elizabeth Warren wants for America. That's what many Americans want for America. Many young Americans in particular. They're passionate about it. These young Democrat socialists, they're called. And well, like Andrew Miller brought out on Friday on the Trumpet Hour, there's a fine line between democratic socialism and authoritarian socialism. Hugo Chavez came in with promises just like Alexandria Cortez. saying, look, we're going to have free stuff for everyone. And if you don't like it, I mean, if I don't do a good job, I'll leave after 2 years. That's my promise. That's my vow to you. And yet he came in with no intention of ever leaving. He grabbed control of the government and everything else in the nation. And now the nation has gone down the drain, and the poor people of Venezuela suffering. Suffering. The New York Post recently had a piece, just a month or two ago, the one-word piece of advice for America's growing socialist left. It's a growing movement in the United States. And the Post has this one word of advice, Venezuela. Are you sure you want to go down that road? Are you sure you want to go on this course? Free college tuition, Medicare for all, minimum wage hikes across the board, everyone gets paid a higher wage? Yeah, well, what happens when that wage won't buy anything? What happens when there's skyrocketing inflation to go with it? What happens when the millions you might come up with barely even buy a loaf of bread? It's happened before. It's happening in Venezuela. It happened in Germany back in the 1930s and 20s. And this is what so many in America prefer. This is what they want. This is what they desire. Andrew Miller, speaking of him, he's on that Trumpet Hour, as I said. He had an article back in July of 2016, falling in love with socialism. Falling in love with it. He mentioned the example of Scandinavia. Okay, so those states haven't just completely failed like Venezuela, but look, you're going to have to accept facts. And it's a shame those facts aren't reported. If you want all of these social programs, you're going to have to pay sky-high taxes. And then at its worst, you end up like Venezuela. A classic example, as Andrew Miller says, of how democratic socialism leads to authoritarian socialism. And so along comes Bernie Sanders, the Bernie Sanders revolution. I mean, he very nearly won the Democratic ticket back in 2016. He might well have won were it not for Hillary Clinton's cheating. He's not moving the party to the left, Andrew Miller says, or he's quoting from a Harvard University teacher. He's moving a generation to the left. That's what's so sad here. It's not just the Democratic Party. It's all of young America falling in love with socialism. Well, go back, as I say, and look for that article at thetrumpet.com, Falling in Love with Socialism from July 2016. And then if you didn't catch that exchange between Andrew Miller and Joel Hilliker on Trumpet Hour Friday, I think it's somewhere in the middle of the show if you wanted to fast forward and just catch those few minutes. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program with more name suggestions or any feedback that you'd like to submit, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Look around. Strongman politics are ascendant suddenly, whereby elections and some pretense of democracy are maintained, the form of it, but those in power seek to undermine every institution or norm that gives democracy meaning. In the West, you've got far-right parties that oftentimes are based not just on platforms of protectionism and closed borders, but also on barely hidden racial nationalism.
That's Barack Obama, former U.S. president, speaking on July 17th, just a little over a month ago in South Africa, celebrating Nelson Mandela Day, talking about the emergence of strongmen around the world. He didn't mention Donald Trump by name in that speech, but he had quite a lot to say about him, saying that there's politicians today who just lie. I mean, they used to at least give you facts. But now they just lie, these strong authoritarians. You can't trust them. And in the West, as he said there, I mean, you've got the far-right parties. Those are the dangerous parties. Notice what he said at the start of this speech. He was introduced by South African President Ramaphosa. I forget his first name, but this is what President Obama, former President Obama, had to say after being introduced. Clip 4.
To President Ramaphosa, who you can see is inspiring new hope in this great country.
He's inspiring hope, it says, in this great country of South Africa. This president who promised, who came into office earlier this year, promising to go after the land of white farmers, to seize control of their property. And well, that process begun just this week. There's several reports brought out yesterday. This one here from news.com.au. It says the South African government has begun the process of seizing land from white farmers. Local newspaper City Press reports two game farms in the northern province of Limpopo are the first to be targeted for unilateral seizure after negotiations with the owners to purchase the property stalled. So they tried to negotiate a selling price, and they couldn't agree. They were far apart. And so the government just helped itself. It's seizing control of the property. This government, headed up by Ramaphosa, who Obama, just a little over a month ago, said he's inspiring hope for this great country. And in the same speech, he talks about the strong men like Trump who tell lies, who don't give you the facts. And here he was right in the presence of this South African strong man who's working to change the Constitution and who's now beginning the process of seizing property, private property. And he's taking it from whites. And there was Obama criticizing Western democracies in South Africa, saying that they were barely hidden racial nationalism, these far-right parties, based not just on platforms of protectionism and closed borders, here again he's going after President Trump, but on barely hidden racial nationalism, which is not even barely hidden in South Africa. It's right out in the open. Fake news through and through. Do you hear much about what's happening in South Africa? Are you going to get the truth from Barack Obama or from those who follow him around and report on his speeches? They love his speeches. He's giving the speech in South Africa, of all places, where the government has begun to seize property from whites. Racial nationalism, right in front of our faces. And yet you just listen to the news coverage today in the United States. I mean, the obsession with all things Trump, everything that he does wrong. Protectionism, borders, security. I mean, it's barely hidden racial nationalism. It says, this is from that report coming out of South Africa. What makes the Ackerland case unique is that they apparently were not given the opportunity to first dispute the claim in court, as the law requires. They had no opportunity to settle this in court. The government just came and took it. It comes as the South African government pushes ahead with plans to amend the country's constitution to allow for the expropriation of land without compensation. So they'll just change the constitution. Not unlike what Hugo Chavez would do. Hey, I'll come in. If you don't like it after 2 years, I'll just step aside. I want what's best for you. Well, here comes this strong man. That's what he is. This strong man. He comes in promising we're gonna take land away from the white owners, and this is what the people want. And then a former president of the United States, he heads over there to give a big speech, criticizing Donald Trump and other far right leaders, and praising President Ramaphosa. Praising him for inspiring hope for the people of South Africa. It says the seizures are intended to test the ability of the government to take land under existing laws, which the ruling African National Congress has previously stated is allowable if in the public interest. Well, I mean, if it's in the public interest, we'll do it. We'll seize it. It says earlier this month, City Press reported the government had drawn up a list of 139 farms and planned to seize to test out Section 25 of the Constitution. So it's going forward. It's testing it out, seeing if the thievery, if they can get away with it. If the seizures go ahead, it would be the first time the state refuses to pay market value for land since the end of apartheid. In 1994. Well, there's another article here about how that many South African farmers are now, they're desperately trying to sell their property to just get something for it before the government comes and takes it away. But because of this, there's so many farms on the market that the price is plummeting, that the value of the property is plummeting, so they can't sell the property. So here they are left in a situation where if they're not being violently beaten by thugs, they can't get rid of their property, and or the government can just come in now and help itself to seizing these farms. Well, the violence there, these farmers that have been killed in some cases, beaten, left for dead. The same website that has the piece, news.com.au, there's a little two-minute video with three farmers trying to tell you about what's actually happening, but it won't be reported. It won't get any coverage. Because, look, Ramaphosa, I mean, he's inspiring hope. Nelson Mandela, I mean, he's a great leader of our age. This is all that you're meant to hear. Everything's great since Mandela came to power in the 90s. Everything's great. Well, here's what some of these farmers had to say. This is clip five.
The shots rang out. It was just bullets everywhere. It was a war zone. My husband said, no, please, my friend, just take what you want. You can take anything. Just leave us alone. My little girl put up her hand and she said, but I've got a piggy bank. You can take my money. My husband said to them, please. And the one guy said, oh, just kill him, brother. And they shot him between the eyes in front of us. Our little boy was born 5 days after daddy's funeral.
Pregnant mother with her little children. And they watched their husband and father. He's shot dead. 400 South African farmers were attacked last year. 400. It's averaging more than one per day. And then now the government has decided to abuse these farmers. You've got the thieves and the robbers on the loose. You've got these violent thugs on the loose. And then you've got the president now. The one Barack Obama says is inspiring hope in the great nation of South Africa. Well, he's not inspiring hope in these farmers. Here's another testimonial. This is clip six.
They came with an iron, you know, a normal clothing iron. They burned me on my leg, telling him that they're going to hurt me if he doesn't open the safe. And he tried again, and then they burned him on his back. I'm out of hospital, but he's still in ICU.
With an iron, and her husband's still in intensive care. They came in, the thugs came in, demanding that the farmer open the safe. They wanted his money. 400 attacks just last year, 2017. Here's one final clip from that same video, clip 7.
I was shot 2 times here, and once here in the neck, and it went outside my head. Yeah. You just feel that burning feeling, and it's a hell of an impact. This stuff is happening every day in my farms.
Shot twice, once through the neck. It's happening every day, as he said there at the end. Every day on these farms. I mean, this is a farmer who's refusing to leave. He's going to go down with his property, I guess. What a tragic situation this is. Is there hope in man, like the prophet Jeremiah said? Is there hope in human government? Is there hope in America's government? In Britain's government? Look at what's happening to this world. As I said on yesterday's program, and you've got all these nations on the march and drawing up these anti-American alliances. The spirit, I mean, Satan is cast down to this earth. You see his fingerprints on everything. He's the cause. He's behind all of this unrest, all of this hate, this hatred, this racism, this racial nationalism, to use the terms Barack Obama did. He's behind it all. He's been cast down, as my father has said repeatedly, and he's confined, along with his demons, he's confined to this earth. And that's the reason, through and through, that's the reason why this world is the way it is today. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a short Bible study on the subject of loyalty. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are We Living in the Last Days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Not that long ago in our nations, the United States and Britain, there was a real spirit of loyalty toward God, toward king in the case of Ephraim here in the UK, king and country, or nation in the case of Americans. People were willing to fight and to die for their nation, if need be. Well, in the Church of God today, and my father has brought this out before, but our loyalty is going to be tested. Loyalty to God and to His truth, to God's work, to God's apostle. I mean, God's preparing His family to rule. He's preparing His kingdom. He's preparing His empire. And before He gives us that responsibility to rule, before He gives us those positions of royal rule, we first have to demonstrate a deeply devoted and submissive attitude toward the authority that's over us. We have to prove our loyalty to God. The dictionary defines loyalty as faithful in allegiance to one's lawful government, faithful to a private person to whom fidelity is held to be due, faithful to a cause, ideal, or custom. In a lot of ways, loyalty is faithfulness. You have to have faith in something in order to develop a true loyalty. Now, when you look into the Bible, the Old Testament, the example of David really comes through, particularly after he was anointed, and then he's on the run, basically, for 17 years. And yet, look at the loyalty, the intense loyalty that David had for God. And even this very carnal king that was out to try to kill him, David was actually loyal to King Saul. Even when Saul was trying to get rid of him, it's an amazing story or history of David looking first and foremost to God for deliverance, for God to follow through on His promise. 1 Samuel 24 and verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. And then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepcotes, by the way, where was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave." So Saul goes into this cave to relieve himself, and it says in verse 4, "And the men of David said unto him, Behold, the day of which the Eternal said to you, Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it shall seem good unto you." Here were David's men whispering in his ear, even quoting scripture, so to speak, saying that, look, you can kill him right now. Surely this must be God's will. It says, "And then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately." That's in verse 4. Verse 5 says, "And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt." So even that he felt guilty about. Even that he felt like he shouldn't have done it. "And he said unto his men, The Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." He's God's anointed. He's still in that office. And so, I mean, if he's disobeying God, I'm not going to disobey God. But I'm not going to take matters into my own hands either. I'm going to let God sort this out. What a lesson there is in this for us. What an attitude that we can emulate. To let God work things out. to not take matters into our own hands. I mean, sure, we've got to be men and women of action. We've got to walk by faith. We've got to go forward. But we certainly don't want to get out in front of Jesus Christ. It says in verse 7, so David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried out to Saul, saying, my Lord, the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. He did this to honor that office that Saul was in, the office of king. Verse 11 says, moreover, my father, see the skirt of your robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of your robe and killed you not, know you, and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand. And I have not sinned against you, yet you hunt my soul to take it. He called Saul his father. This man who was hunting his soul, he said, my father. Verse 16, it came to pass, when David had made an end of speaking these words unto Saul, that Saul said, is this your voice, my son David? And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. And he said to David, you are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded you evil. And how true that was. You can see why God selected David. He had a heart like God's. Saul, however, did not. Saul was trying to kill David. Saul was, more and more, he was becoming mentally deranged. And yet David still, he still let God work it out. There's another example in 1 Samuel 26, a couple of pages over. In this chapter, you read about the history regarding David and his nephew Abishai and Ahimelech, the Levite. And here again, they're descending upon Saul and his men. It says in verse 5, and David arose, this is 1 Samuel 26, David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched. And David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the captain of his host, and Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. So here's another opportunity, you could say. Saul, all of his men, they're sleeping. They're in the midst of a deep slumber. And then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, who will go down with me to Saul to the camp? And Abishai said, I will go down with you. So they went down there, and David, it says in verse 7, and Abishai came to the people by night, and behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster, and Abner and the people lay around about him. And then said Abishai to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray you, with the spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time. I mean, I won't even have to bother with it, David must have thought. Abishai will take care of everything. He'll do all the dirty work. All that David had to do is just give him the nod. Give him the go-ahead. Verse 9, and David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? One of the more famous statements that David ever made. Who is going to lift his hand against the Lord's anointed? Verse 10 says, David said, furthermore, as the Eternal lives, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. I mean, God can take care of this with the snap of a finger. I don't need to intervene in this case. The Eternal God forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray you, take you now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. So David, as you see here from these examples, he was resolved to remain loyal to God and the office of God's anointed. it was important for this loyalty to be tested from time to time. And that's what these were. These were tests. And David kept passing the test. Now think about that attitude. I mean, we're all under supervision. We all report to some kind of supervisor, whether it's a parent or a boss or a teacher, a minister. And how easy is it to go around that authority or to take matters into your own hands or to disregard the instructions you're receiving from above? Verse 12, so David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they got them away, and no man saw it nor knew it, neither awaked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Eternal was fallen upon them. It's pretty amazing. I mean, God put them to sleep. God was testing David's loyalty. David made the right decision. He told Abishai, no, we're not going to lift our hands against the Lord's anointed. God takes care of his work. God guides and directs his work. God has a master plan. Will you let him work it out the way he sees fit, or will you take matters into your own hands? That's the question. One final verse here that we'll conclude with. This is in 2 Samuel, 2 Samuel 23 in verse 3. It says, the God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spoke to me. He that rules over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. These are the kinds of rulers that God is looking for. These are the kinds of rulers that God and Jesus Christ are preparing to rule the world. Loyal, dedicated servants, loyal to God the Father and Jesus Christ, first and foremost. Loyal to God's work and church, loyal to the apostle presiding over the church, to the human instruments that God has given to the church as gifts. Can God totally rely upon you and me to loyally obey him no matter what, at all times? You think about what God said regarding Abraham. I know, this is from Genesis 22, I know that you fear me, seeing that you've not withheld your only son. I know you fear me. I know you're in this to the end. He knew the same thing about King David. God really does. He'll test it, but he'll also reward this kind of faithful, wholehearted loyalty. Well, I'm going to cut it just a couple of minutes short as I make my way down. We're back to the school year. The semester is in play, and Tuesdays, of course, if you remember, are the days I also have forum right at the top of the hour. So we'll conclude today's program with that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, don't forget, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.